Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back here on this final hour of the Steve Jones Show on this Thursday and on this game day for Penn State and Purdue. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve, not in the Sunbury Motors Studio today, but is standing by in West Lafayette as we get ready for kickoff at 8 o'clock tonight here on WKOK. Coverage beginning at 6:30. But today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory, great service department and sales staff, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And with that comes the need for many great behind-the-scenes employees. While they have many awesome technicians ready to serve you, they need more due to the busy business that a 107-year-old dealership has earned. They are looking for entry-level and experienced technicians to work in their quick lane, car light truck service, heavy truck service, body frame and alignment, and towing departments. Whether you are an experienced technician, an entry-level technician looking for your first job, or someone looking for a career change, they would love to hear from you. Stop by in person. Apply online at sunburymotors.com or call Todd at 286-7746. Now we get to the Action Network's Brett McMurphy. He joined us on the show a few days ago after he was first to report the Big Ten being in some negotiations, or early negotiations at least, with Pac-12 teams such as Oregon, Cal, Stanford, Washington, and others to join the conference. And he joined us a couple of weeks ago discussing that.
From the Action Network, one of the best in the business, Brett McMurphy. Brett, great reporting, especially all summer long on some of these big stories. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you again. Now, look, I want to do the fun part first, then we'll get to the other part. Brett did put out his bowl projections today. Last year at the end, you were 92% heading into that weekend. Brett also wants to point out that his preseason was at 9%, which means you're like all the rest of us. He does have Penn State in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl. All right, so how much fun do you have putting that together?
It's kind of a labor of love. It's like a Rubik's Cube in that, you know, once you put certain teams in certain spots, it kind of, you know, you filter down within a specific conference, and then you look at the past bowl games and you're like, wait, that team was in that bowl. I can't put that team in that bowl. So then you have to mix everything up again. But no, it's fun. And then, you know, whenever possible, you know, you try to stick rivalry teams together in bowl games is more of wishful thinking. But yeah, at this point, I always tell people, if you don't like my bowl projections, well, guess what? They'll change in a week. So just wait till next week.
See, it's all about fun, right? At least
till that last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then the last week you get serious. People want to know. But yep. It must be at least fun for you with all the news that has come out, where none of it's on the field, to at least write about something that is fun on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's college football is kind of becoming similar to the NFL in a number of ways. And one way is that there's never really a dead period, if you will. There's always something going on, whether it's currently now with realignment, NIL, you know, coaches usually didn't get fired until the end of the year. Now you see, you know, mid-season firings like the NFL. So college football certainly is mirroring the NFL as it's becoming a 365-a-day news cycle. And obviously most recently with everything that's going on regarding realignment, especially with your home conference, the Big Ten Conference.
So let's get to that. Let's discuss USC and UCLA are coming in starting August 2nd, 2024. The new TV deal will be in place starting July 1 next year. So, Brett, you know, Kevin Warren has said they're not done expanding. So let's talk about this Oregon proposition first that was put out by at Action Network HQ. What do you know about that? Because obviously it doesn't sound like it's the highest level of discussion.
Well, it is, but it isn't. I mean, you know, because here's the deal. I mean, one, I wouldn't have reported it if it wasn't significant. And I did want to make clear that, you know, the Oregon president, AD Rob Mullins, and Kevin Warren are not in this meeting. But what it is, it's people a little bit further down the food chain, if you will. And basically, they want to get all their ducks lined up in a row, to play on words, as far as this moving further up the food chain so they can go ahead and pull the trigger on this. The same thing happened with USC and UCLA. The only difference was USC stuff did not get out until literally the day of when they were officially announced. So now with all the talk privately and publicly about expanding within the Big Ten, these things, you know, I was able to get this out, and, you know, it's pretty significant because the Pac-12 is in the midst of trying to, you know, they're trying to, you know, engage and finalize a new media rights deal for the league that starts in 2024. But then you've got the dilemma that Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, shoot, the Arizona schools, Colorado, Utah, you know, they potentially could be in the Big Ten or the Big 12. And so, you know, how eager are you to sign a new media rights deal if you're any of those remaining Pac-12 schools when you know specifically Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, there's an opportunity you can go to the Big Ten and double whatever George Kliakoff, the number he puts on the table in a few months. And so, you know, it's significant. I mean, I did an interview with, I think it was Big 12 Radio, because they would be impacted by this if those schools leave, because I think the Arizona schools, Colorado and Utah, then go to the Big 12. And they asked me, what percentage chance do you think Oregon will end up in the Pac-12? I think I said like 85%, and they tweeted it, and of course everyone reacted to that. And, you know, that number may be low, but I mean, Kevin Warren said publicly he wants to get the 20. He's got an interview with Bryant Gumbel of HBO Real Sports that airs tomorrow. It was taped last week. He's asked directly. I've seen the transcript of the interview. Do you foresee the Big Ten at 20 teams? And he said yes. He didn't say maybe. He said he didn't say possibly. He didn't say let's see. He said yes. I think that's very telling. And the biggest criticism of USC and UCLA being in the Big Ten is they're stranded on an island. Their poor kids are going to have to travel across the country. Well, how do you solve that problem? You had four more schools on the West Coast, and now suddenly that's not quite an issue.
Grant rights is an issue, especially for the ACC. It's also an issue when it comes to the Pac-12 or Pac-10, but it's the opposite issue. Their grant of rights runs out in 22 and a half months, thus they're exponentially more vulnerable. So is it safe to say, Brett, that one of two things happens within a year, that schools leave to go to the Big Ten, or the Pac-10 signs a deal with a new grant of rights, and those are the two scenarios?
Be very honest, Steve, unless the Big Ten does a total 180 on everything they've said about expansion, I think the only option is option one. And those schools sign to go to the Big Ten, and then you have the other schools sign to go to the Big 12. And that, you know, because look, you can leave, if you're a Pac-12 member, you can leave and go to another league at the start of 2024, and you do not lose your grant of rights. So it's all based on timing. So why is the Pac-12 so, you know, an endangered species right now and not the Big 12? Well, I'm an alumni from the Big 12, and a year ago the Big 12 was in this position. The only reason the Big 12 is not in this position now, and this is the honest truth, is because there's no schools in the Big 12 that the Big 10 or the SEC wants. They already got Oklahoma and Texas, so nobody wants them. For once, that's actually an advantage, because the schools in the Pac-12 are attracted to the Big Ten. That could ultimately lead to the end of the Pac-12, which would be sad. I don't like leagues going away. I hate that. Southwest Conference, WAC, Big East football, et cetera, et cetera. But Pac-12 has been around for 107 years. I don't think it's going to be around past 110 years, to be honest.
Interesting. And again, they're most vulnerable because their grant of rights are up first. The grant of rights that are up last are the ACC. I know that several people have looked at the grant of rights. I know you have as well. It seems like it's extremely difficult to get out of unless you want to pay a huge number. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, you know, look, a lawyer can get out of anything. You can get out of any contract. Are you willing to pay? Are you willing to pay that much money? The other thing is, do you really want to be the school, any school in the ACC, do you really want to be that school to challenge the grant of rights? You know, do you want that scarlet letter on your chest? Because if you're not successful, you're always going to be known as a school that tried to get out and couldn't get out. But that's good news for the ACC, because if they weren't locked into those grant of rights, I guarantee you the SEC would go after North Carolina, Virginia. They'd go after Clemson, maybe Florida State. I think the Big Ten also would have an interest in Miami, possibly Florida State, also Virginia and North Carolina. But they've got 14 years left, and it's kind of like the old Meatloaf, Paralyzed by the Dashboard Light song. I love you till the end of time, and then I'm praying for the end of time. They're praying for the end of these grant of rights in the ACC, because they're going to be making half of what the Big Ten schools are going to be making. They're going to be making half of what the SEC is making. And to sum up how crazy college football is right now, Vanderbilt's making more money than Clemson in their media rights deal, and Rutgers is making more than Alabama.
Yes. In fact, first of all, two parts. Number one, I never thought the great philosopher Meatloaf would be quoted on this show, but it's really cool you did. Number two, before USC came in, and this goes back to May, I said almost verbatim the same thing. If I'm USC, I'm looking around saying, Rutgers is making more than we are? No.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they thought.
And to be very honest, and since you brought that up, Steve, I have not reported this ever, but I'll tell you this. I don't remember the exact time frame. It could be anywhere from 3 to 6 years ago. I'd have to go back and scrounge through some old notes and different things. But I know that USC had an interest in the Big 12. Now, this was, low-level stuff. It was never anything I reported because, one, they didn't want it out. Two, they weren't sure if that's what they were going to do. But, yeah, USC's been, in one way or another, they've been trying to get out for a long time. And, yeah, and now, it's college football has become the mini NFL. You have 16 to 20 schools in the Big Ten, 16 to 20 in the SEC. One's on Fox, one's on ESPN. The two conferences will meet, and it'll be college football's version of the Super Bowl.
Probably the California Board of Regents can't do much about UCLA going to the Big Ten. This doesn't affect USC. They're a private school. But would it appease the Board of Regents if Cal were a part of it?
Bingo. You're 1,000% right. And that's why Cal is under consideration. Governor Newsom cannot, and I guess legally they can do something, but they're not going to make UCLA withdraw from the Big Ten. If so, then have me back on and, throw tomatoes at me and say you were dead wrong on this. I don't see that happening. However, I think that's one way you can quiet Governor Newsom and the Board of Regents is the Big Ten adds four and Cal is part of that group. Now the Big Ten will say, well, we like Cal because of their academics, et cetera, et cetera. But behind the scenes, you're absolutely right. It appeases Governor Newsom. And again, not that he could stop this, but he could make life a lot easier for the Big Ten if that happened also.
by the way, if they're throwing tomatoes, I would be standing next to you because I've made the same statement. So, I mean, so we can just kind of split the tomatoes, okay, as they get thrown at us. The next part is the Notre Dame part of it. I mean, really, legitimately, the only gigantic chip left in the game. NBC's negotiate or wants to negotiate with them. I don't know if they've opened negotiations or not. We know what Notre Dame said, $75 million. Rumors are saying they get $60. How do you see that playing out with them?
Well, at least from the people I've talked to within the Big Ten right now, and again, things have changed so quickly. But right now, they envision Notre Dame remaining independent. They believe that, you know, the $60 to $75 million, whatever that final number is close enough to what the SEC and Big Ten will have. Now, the two things that can change that. One is that the money just continues to get obscene with the Big Ten and the SEC, and they believe there's too much of a gap to that they can remain an independent. That's part A. Part B is, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the college football playoff. We got four more years of four teams, and then it will expand in some matter. We don't know what that new playoff format's going to look like. If it is a disadvantage as an independent as far as getting in a college football playoff, then that could push Notre Dame into a conference. I think at the end of the day, and I've said this as long as I've been covering college football, which has been a long time, Notre Dame wants to be an independent. They prefer to be an independent. And until there's financial or playoff limitations, I think they will remain an independent. But whether the Big Ten goes ahead and adds those four schools and Notre Dame comes along later and says, hey, we want to join, then guess what? The Big Ten will have 21 teams where they'll find another dance partner and they'll have 22. But they are not waiting for Notre Dame to make a decision before they move on these Pac-12 schools. So don't think they're waiting for Notre Dame before they do anything.
Is there any concern about a collusion lawsuit if the Big Ten were to get four more Pac-12 schools?
I mean, I'm sure there's concerns about lawsuits, you know, concerning everything, but how would you, again, I'm not smart enough to figure this out, but I would just say these schools are coming to the Big Ten. Like I had a source tell me, every school that's not in the SEC has come to the Big Ten trying to get into the Big Ten. So, you know, how could you sue the Big Ten? I mean, USC and UCLA didn't have to go to the Big Ten. They could have stayed in the Pac-12. That was their decision. You know, they make it like, well, the Big Ten made them come. No, Oklahoma and Texas didn't have to go to the SEC. That was their decision. So, again, I don't see – I'm sure somebody can spin it. You know how lawyers are. They'll spin anything any way they want. But if you have these schools that want to come into this conference because, oh, by the way, you're making more money than any other conference, and, oh, by the way, in 1 to 5 years, you're going to be having to compensate players, whether it's TV revenue, whether it's pay for play, whatever it is, so you better get as much money you can. Because some of this money is going to go to these players. So how do you blame the conference for that? I'm sure somebody will try. I'm sure they probably will try some kind of lawsuits. But I just, again, I'm not smart enough to figure out how it would work.
Yep. Oh, neither am I. That's why I asked you. I thought you'd be smarter than I would. Finally, you did bring up pay for play. Part of this interview that Brian Gumbel does on Real Sports on HBO with Kevin Warren does include Brian Gumbel, and you put it out, by the way, on your Twitter account that was released by HBO, where he's asked about paying players. How do you see that coming about and the fact that he is so direct about it?
I think from talking to Kevin and talking to some other commissioners, I think a ton of ADs, they all realize that this is going to happen. I mean, we have an NIL right now, and that's a mess. I would compare it to the Wild Wild West, but I don't want to insult the Wild Wild West. But the pay for play or compensating players or whatever, they have witnessed what happened with the NIL, and it's a mess. So I think what they want to do is they want to get ahead of this pay for pay per play. C.J. Stroud, Ohio State's quarterback, remarked the other day he thinks the players should get, you know, a percentage of the TV deal. And, you know, I can't disagree with him. So I think what Kevin Warren is trying to do and the other commissioners is they want to come up with a plan beforehand as opposed to NIL where, you know, all the horses are out of the barn and now you're trying to rope them all up and get them back in with NIL. That's never happened. They're scattered everywhere. So I think Kevin is wanting to be upfront when he said, I want to have discussions about this. I want to be at the forefront of this so they can figure out, you know, and the thing that's scary for the non-Big Ten and non-SEC conferences is what may work for those two leagues because they're going to be raking in close to $100 million per school per year. What may work for them may not work for the Big 12. It may not work for the ACC. It's certainly not going to work for the MAC, Conference USA, the American, et cetera. But they're not going to be concerned with that. They're like, you know, they're only worried about their own conferences. And if they want to do something a certain way, the other conferences financially may not be able to do that. They may have to do something else. They may have to do something different. That's fine. But the Big Ten and SEC wants to do it because they know the best players ultimately are going to end up with the most lucrative financial deals.
And the next lucrative
NFL.
Yeah, and the next lucrative financial deals, what do you do with the college football playoff? In the end, based on the people you've talked to, Brett, how many might they go to?
The Big Ten or playoff?
No, playoff.
Definitely more than four. The thing is, if they go to 12, they'll make substantially more money than if they go to 8 because you're adding another round, you're adding more inventory. Well, right. If you're at 12, do you just go ahead and go to 16? That's something, you know, that's got to be decided. I think what will help them is that, you know, they want more than one network, whether it's ESPN or Fox or whoever, to bid on this thing. And I think it could be like the NFL playoffs. You've got different networks televising different rounds of the playoffs. You maximize the profit. So if I would guess right now, I would say, again, I think 12 right now. But, man, things change so much. But I do feel like the commissioners want to reward the top four teams with a bye. And you can do that with 12 teams. If you go to 16, obviously there's no buys. They obviously got to, you know, down in the weed stuff, they got to figure out when these games are going to be played. Because quite, you know, very honestly, the NFL is gobbling up all the TV spots in January and in December. So they've got to find out a calendar when they can do this and also that works with scholastic schedules. That is, if kids are still going to class in the new playoff format. Who knows? It may not be.
Absolutely incredible stuff. Brett, great work as always. And I know you've been busy and doing a lot of these. You're not bad for an Oklahoma State guy. Pretty good. appreciate you so much, Brett. We look forward to talking to you again because I think you just gave the audience pretty good education.
Anytime, Steve. Take care. Thank you.
And that is the Action Network's Brett McMurphy. That was just a fascinating interview. Lots of information. And, of course, it comes today that the Big 12 has now jumped ahead of the Pac-12 in renegotiating their next TV deal, which, of course, ends in 2025. That's when Texas and Oklahoma are set to go to the SEC with the new talks starting now with the Big 12 and Fox and ESPN. There are some considerations that Texas and OU could leave earlier for the SEC. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as this media carousel continues. Continued all offseason, and it continues right up to the start of kickoff for tonight's game between Penn State and Purdue. It certainly has become a 365-day news cycle that is college football. Coming up in the final half hour, we will actually talk about what we'll see tonight on the field, Penn State-Purdue. Thomas Frank Carr from On3 is going to join us in the final half hour. He joined us earlier this week to break down tonight's game. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Humble Fork, and online at sunburymotors.com. I'm Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour on this Thursday. It's game day for Penn State and Purdue. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve standing by in West Lafayette for kickoff tonight at 8 here on WKOK. But other than that, he'll be back in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory, a great service department that is there for you with the diagnostics, with the inspections, with all the routine maintenance, and a sales staff that is not just there for you. Well, they're there for you, I should say. They're not just there for the sale. That is all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee. That's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. T. Frank, Thomas Frank Carr, joined us earlier this week from on3.com to break down tonight's game between the Nittany Lions and the Boilermakers, and we'll replay that now as we continue to count down the kickoff.
Let's bring in T. Frank. Great to have you back, my friend.
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you doing this fine Monday with football in the air?
It's about time.
Yeah, for real.
It's enough of the talking part. All right, let's just get to it. Let's watch some games. Okay, so obviously we know what the big story is today, and that's, you know, that Gabe and Sander are going to split kickoffs. No, Drew Aller obviously is going to be the will be the number two quarterback for game one. What'd you think?
Well, I think that, and this is deserved. I'm going to start with a joke, but it's a deserved conversation about a guy that we're not going to see play on Thursday. So, you know, this is a big conversation today, and then if everything goes right for Penn State, we're not going to see Drew Aller Thursday or Friday or, you know, any day of the week. But
you
with
could
Drew
see him,
and
could see
his,
him four times.
Yes, that's true. That, you know, you can see him up to four times in certain games this year. But, you know, in those situations, I think Penn State will have the game in the bag, and we'll get to see, you know, the backups and Drew in those situations. But really, it's just an interesting journey for what we've heard and what we've seen of Drew from high school to college and the early spring part of, you know, spring football and everything we heard, where this was not the case early in his development from what we were told and what we saw. Didn't have a great blue-white game. Things were slow for him because he really is a quarterback that needs to grasp the playbook, because that's where all of his talents lie, is in the passing side of things. Not to say that he isn't a good scrambler, because he is. He manipulates the pocket very well, but he's not a runner. So the mental side of the game, which is going to be slow for any quarterback, that catching up is an important factor. And to me, this is a sign that he's ahead of schedule. Because what I've said all offseason is, and I think this is a fair assessment, football's a very hard game for football, for football players, to know all the things you need to know to be able to play. And the fact that he, as the quarterback who needs to know everything, is in the second position, that means that they're confident that if something happens to Sean Clifford, he can go in and functionally operate the offense. And that sounds like that's not a lot, but that is a lot. that's a lot to be able to do, especially if you're the backup.
Let's get to Aiden O'Connell for a moment. You've done a lot of quarterback breakdown. He's a sixth-year quarterback, former walk-on himself, 72% passer. What do you see in him and how Purdue approaches its pass game?
I love watching him throw the ball because he's what I want every college quarterback to be, and that is fearless, because he will put the ball into just about any window. And that is both a good and a bad thing for Purdue. Now, it's much more good than bad because he pushes, as James Franklin talked about today, the vertical passing game is a big part of what Purdue wants to do. And if you can get those explosive plays through the passing game, that's a huge benefit to your offense and, you know, and to having a winning formula in college football. So last season, that was a huge part of what he brought to the table. And the difference from Purdue in previous years to O'Connell is he's willing to put the ball into those windows. And I wouldn't say he has an exceptional arm. I wouldn't say he's an exceptional talent. As a guy who's a sixth-year quarterback, you know, respectfully in these situations, I know injuries, and there can be a number of reasons you're a sixth-year quarterback. But typically, if you're not a third-year quarterback going to the NFL or a fourth-year guy, there's a reason you were in college. And he still produces at a level, and he still makes throws at a level that are exceptional for the college level. And he's able to put the ball into windows downfield because of that anticipation, that an understanding, and a good zip on the football that a lot of quarterbacks just aren't brave enough to make. So that bravery is what is going to get Purdue into all the games that they're in this year. And that's going to win them a couple games, might get them up some upsets. But on the flip side, he also is a player that has fearless confidence in his arm when he probably shouldn't, and you can get the ball from him. So to me, forcing him into those situations, making him uncomfortable, and having him still throw the football, that is the key to Penn State's success on Thursday.
Well, there's another part to it too. They run a lot of quick game, and you've got to be able to right away make a read at the line of scrimmage and get rid of it. He seems to do that really well, and it cuts down, it increases your completion percentage, and it cuts down on the interceptions when you're running quick game.
Yeah, and so the thing about their offense is they run quick game, but they can do less quick game and go more vertical, and they can attack.
Right.
Purdue can do a little bit of everything, and that's one of the nice things that you're right about the quick game and throwing the ball and making those pre-snap reads, but it's not just quick game. A lot of times you can do predetermined reads or give the quarterback an easy concept, or even if it's an RPO and it's kind of a simple either you give it or you pull it and you throw it, they can do any of those things because O'Connell is a very smart quarterback. So that's the threat.
Yeah,
is that whatever you do, they can find a way to counter and punch back.
Because one of their concerns right now is David Bell was outstanding at 50-50 balls. I think that's fair to say. I mean, great. Their concern in camp is they don't feel like their receivers are as great at 50-50 balls. Now, they're not David Bell, but that is a part of their game.
Yeah, and so the tight end,
Payne Durham is outstanding. He's really good.
Yes. He's the one guy. He's the known commodity. And that's when you've seen Purdue be successful and this formula work. You know, they've had some exceptional receivers going back to Rondale Moore and you know, so on and so forth. You know the names of the receivers that are good. We don't know who they are this year, but they still have this ability to produce yards and points for the most part.
Right.
So, you know, I think O'Connell and the way he plays and Brohm and the way he calls the game, they alleviate some of those problems. But it absolutely is a problem. If you don't have a guy that can elevate the play of everybody and make the quarterback look good in those situations where he throws the ball into a window, because you're right, those 50-50 balls, those balls down the sideline, he does not care. He'll just, if it's one-on-one and that's his read, he'll throw the ball up there. And his placement isn't always perfect, but if you have a receiver that can go get it, that's, you know, that's a winning formula. If they don't have that, they lose that part of the game this year, which is a factor heading into this game. So I'm interested to see who the receiver is this year. You know, like who's going to be the guy that steps up and makes plays, because O'Connell will throw the ball to anybody who's open. And is it more of a spread the wealth this year, or is it there going to be a design to get somebody the ball regularly? And we don't know who that is yet, because as you pointed out, there's nobody that seems to have stepped up yet.
Well, and there's another part. Jeff Brohm is obviously somebody that over the years has been noted for the pass game. When you look at him schematically, what do you like about him?
I like everything, you know?
Yeah.
I like a lot of what they do because, and like I said earlier, they do a little bit of everything. So they can line up under center, they can go spread, and they got creative last year trying to run the football. And that is both a blessing and a curse because I think they use creative ways to get the, you know, to run the football, but they're desperately finding creative ways to run the football because they can't run it in a traditional sense. So when it comes to the scheme, two things stand out is that I don't see a lot of mistakes. So they're well coached. The quarterback is smart. He makes good decisions. And the play caller, I like that when I see a defense defeat his plan A, he can quickly go back to the quick game, like you talked about. If they're not getting the ball down the field vertically, he'll switch to the quick game. They'll run RPO. They can add in motion into their offense. So any trick that they need, he can dial it up and they can execute it. But the problem is, obviously, that they need to go to plan B and C sometimes because they're not fully executing plan A because the talent or the situation wasn't favorable for them in that situation.
Obviously, O'Connell, what kind of job does he do when they go tempo?
So, you know, that's a lot of directing at the line of scrimmage, and tempo is a lot of set plays. It's more so about the quickness of the decisions, but I think a lot of the decisions in those tempo situations come from the sideline, and you're just not doing the check with me's and you're running the play, but you've got to be able to operate and orchestrate and have awareness. And that's another layer of his game, that maturity to know what to do in all those situations. It was actually interesting what James Franklin said today about the tempo and about if you're just watching the coach's film, if you're just watching the cut-ups, and I have some friends who have access to those things, and I know you probably have seen this at times where you're looking at just kind of the antiseptic version of here's the play from this angle, here's the
right
play from this angle.
Yep.
If you don't watch the game live, you don't see the speed at which these things happen and kind of that nature of the game. So it is a very interesting thing from a prep standpoint that you need to be able to experience that and watch the way they operate and orchestrate things because, you know, I do think it is a part of their game. But like I said, it's another tool in what they do as far as the diversity of this offense, which I think is really the strength.
Yeah, because, I mean, you need to be – as a coordinator or as somebody who's in charge of personnel packages, if you get a read on how many seconds between snaps, you're not going to get that in the all 22 because when they're done, they go to the next play. So you actually do
yep.
need to watch the TV copy. There's no question about that. What are you looking for on Thursday night?
I always hate to boil this down to basics, but we got 2 6-year quarterbacks playing and Aiden O'Connell. You know, you could make the argument that if Sean Clifford was in the same offense for 3 or 4 years, he might have a similar profile as a quarterback that knows everything coming into this game, makes good decisions, knows where to go to the football, and can be selectively aggressive. Because we've seen him play very well when he's clear, clean, and confident. Is he clear, clean, and confident heading into this game Thursday night? Has he reached that point in Mike Yurcich's offense? So if you get good Sean Clifford, I think Penn State has overwhelming talent compared to Purdue. With Branson Dean and what James Franklin talked about with the fact that I was reading today he might be nicked up. Branson Dean, the defensive tackle, is one of their only pass rushers. A lot of what Purdue and their cover zero and all those things, that is all based on pressure. And if you don't have George Karlaftis, they lost both, not just Karlaftis, they lost both of their top pass rushers from
last
year.
Yes, they did. Yep.
So I don't know where that pressure's coming from. Scotty Humpich, he's a really interesting player coming from Murray State. I think he's got quickness and speed. But Murray State versus Olufashanu is very different. So pressure and quarterbacks is going to be a big part of this game, I think. And if Penn State's quarterback plays cool, calm, and collected, and you can force O'Connell to make some of those mistakes that he's willing to make, he's willing to throw the football out there, then Penn State can get up early with Vanny Diaz and this aggressive defense making all that happen. So who gets the pressure and which quarterback plays best in that situation?
Because what cover zero means, they're going to blitz, blitz, blitz. Going to get a lot of man.
Yep.
So
yes,
you know,
and that leads to a lot of big plays.
You got to pick it up. You pick it up. You beat your guy. You got it.
Sounds simple, but then again, that's always been my MO. All right.
Steve, I love that you are so consistent. You are such a rock.
D, always great to have you on the show, my friend.
Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to Thursday.
And that is On Three's Thomas Frank Carr as we count down to kickoff now. We're getting to about 3 hours away at this point as we wrap up this Thursday edition of the Steve Jones Show. As for the game tonight for myself, I mentioned earlier, what's the offensive line going to look like? What's the continuity going to look like? How's the new guys in the secondary going to look like, all those new faces? Tough environment, of course. You got the blackout tonight in West Lafayette for the season opener. But when it comes, push comes to shove, I like Penn State to take care of business tonight. I think it's a close, competitive game. I'm going to go with 26-20, Nittany Lions getting the win here today. Wouldn't be surprised to see Purdue maybe jump out to an early lead in this one, but I do think Penn State will get the run game going with the young guys in there, and I think you'll see Sean Clifford make some plays late to help the Nittany Lions get ahead and win. And also, too, I do like Penn State's defensive line against Purdue's offensive line, and I definitely would love to see how that rotation looks with all the new pieces in there as well. Very excited to see Danny Denai Sutton and Chop Robinson in particular to see if they can make some plays tonight, too. But I like the Nittany Lions in a close one, 26-20. We'll see how they do. We'll be here to recap it tomorrow. Tonight's coverage beginning at 6:30 with Steve, Jack Cam, Roger Corey, and the rest of the game, and the rest of the gang, rather, and the kickoff will be at 8:05 right here on WKOK, WKOK.com, and the SBC app. That'll do it for today's edition of the show. Our thanks again to Dennis Dodd, all of our high school football roundtable guys, Brett McMurphy and T. Frank for joining us. Thank you for joining us. As always, enjoy the game tonight. We'll see how things go. We'll be here to recap it and break it down tomorrow with Mark Wogenrich from SI.com. He'll join us at 4:06. Jody McDonald from WIP in Philadelphia is going to join us at 3:35 tomorrow as well to talk some Eagles and Phillies. And the King will join us tomorrow as we make our picks for this week in college football. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.